You're listening to a download from the outdoorstation.co.uk. Number 472.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station and part 4 of this 7-part series recorded during the 2018 TGO Challenge. I hope you've been enjoying the series and others related to the TGO Challenge, which can of course be found over on the outdoorstation.co.uk library back catalogue, and now exceeds more than 60, I believe. And they go right back to the very first interview in 2005. If you've been enjoying the series, please feel free to drop us a line with any comments and thoughts. It's always good to know if it hits the spot. A word of warning relating to this podcast, though. If you're a lover of wild places and have seen wind farms up close, you'll know the impact they can make on your emotions. When I undertook my first crossing in 2004, the route up Glendoe was a no-go area due to the construction of a dam. It's only in recent years that the path has been reopened, and the last few times I went that way, it was just me, the dam, wild open countryside, and usually freezing cold bitter wind to go with it. Now, yes, not the most enjoyable walking conditions, but at least surrounded by nature and the true rugged Scottish landscape. This time, however, I was completely taken by surprise and was a bit of an emotional train wreck. You'll probably hear it in my voice, and hopefully the description will give you a better idea of how the wild landscape has been virtually obliterated. Lee, Tony and all the others we met at Chalybeat Springs were equally downhearted that night. When you have witnessed this scale of construction up close, you'll also begin to wonder about the true value of wind power, with all its various limitations and drawbacks. ...8:30 and I'm just about to leave the Morag's Lodge at Fort Augustus and take the route up Glendoe past the reservoir heading for Chalybeat Springs. However, there's lots of rumours going around that the normal 2 or 3k road walk up that hill before you get to the entrance to the main track has now been bypassed slightly by a footpath, but how good it is and where it is, no one appears to know. It's a great big secret. So I'm meeting the guys shortly on the corner in Fort Augustus, and looking out the window, the weather is absolutely fabulous, which is a little bit of a danger. There's nothing worse than it being too hot when you're doing a long climb. So I've topped up with water, made sure I've got plenty of water. The clouds are moving fairly quickly, which indicates there could be a bit of a breeze up at the reservoir. I've been up there 3 times now, I think, since the reservoir's been built, and every time I've been there, there's a howling gale up there, just because of the nature of the landscape, I guess. So if those clouds are anything to go by, I'm anticipating it being very blowy, but still, hopefully, fairly bright by the time we get there. But of course, I'll fill you in as the adventure progresses. ...5 o'clock and the end of probably one of the most depressing days I've ever had on the TGO Challenge. In the 10 years I've been doing it, covering 14 years. We left Fort Augustus this morning at 9:30. The guys had a really good night in the Loch Ness B&B. Not cheap, but by the sound of it, lovely. And when I went to collect them there, I was offered tea and coffee and all sorts of exciting things. And the weather was lovely. It was a really glorious start. Lovely sunny day. Threatened to be sunny all day long, so I put the t-shirt on. And off we went. Now, if you've ever done Glendoe before, you will know that the usual way is to walk up the roadside, which is a bit dangerous because it's sort of a fast hairpin, to the entrance to the works, and then the long, laborious trail up the works. Just as you leave Fort Augustus now, over the bridge, there's a little side path, which is a lovely meandering path, which takes you parallel to the road, crosses over at one stage, and then takes you up the incline. It's still a pretty steep climb, but so it is walking up the side of the road. And that bypasses the entrance to the works and gets you onto the track. And as I say, the track is then away you go on the... I've found another tick. The way you go on the way up to Glendoe. And the Glendoe trail is laborious. It was pleasant enough weatherwise. The wind was chilly, but it was fine. But they've certainly widened the track as you go up there, which didn't really give us a clue of what we were going to face. When we eventually got to the top of Glendoe and then to the reservoir, which I thought the track was for, and over the last few years when I've done it, there has just been the one track going past the reservoir straight out to the other side. It's another world. It's like a Antarctic survey or a moon base. The area is completely covered in porter cabins. There are two helipads. There are, I counted, almost 100 wind turbines, each one with its own separate road coming off the main road. And the infrastructure is there as well, so the village consists of 40 or 50 porter cabins, which are obviously partly work, partly sleeping quarters. Countless, huge, great trucks. A concrete plant. Several massive buildings, which for obviously refurbishing and maintaining the equipment and doing whatever they need to do, I guess. And it took us all day to walk across it. And all of us were really, really depressed by this, having not anticipated this massive wind farm. So we made our way to Chalybeate Springs, which is where everybody sort of agreed to meet up, which is normally a quiet little spot. But apparently Mick, who spoke to one of the workers there, found out that Chalybeate Springs, where we're camping right now, is actually in the centre of Zone 10 of their next development of wind turbines. And you think about wind turbines as being eco-friendly and bringing a lot of power to a much needed area using natural resources, but you forget about the infrastructure, the ditches that have been built to put in all the power cables and communication cables, the culverts, all the streams have been re-diverted. Culverts have been done, embankments and damming has been done. I say the concrete plant is right there as well. So environmentally, the impact is phenomenal. And hence the reason for our depression. We're all the same. We're all walked through it. We've just spent the whole day walking through a building site. And the track that was the original track that we walked on the last two or three times over the years has now doubled in size. It's the width of a motorway. And it has to be to cater for these massive, great vehicles. So unfortunately, as good as it is to get into the tent and the weather's calmed down a bit, we had a bit of rain, but I'm going to sit down now and try and be positive and enjoy the meal. So I'll come back to you sometime tomorrow, I guess. But yeah, unfortunately, a sad, sad day. Wednesday morning, 8:15, and another fresh start to the day at Challey Beach Springs. It was a cold night last night. The wind dropped and the rain dropped, thankfully. Just a short spurt of it came through. And Mick tells me that he registered it was 1 degree last night, went down to 1 degree, and certainly had frost on the tent this morning when I woke up. Didn't sleep that well last night. I don't know what it was. I was tired, slept for the first sort of 5 or 6 hours, and then I was just restless after that. Couldn't get comfortable for some reason. The ground isn't particularly good, but it's doable. However, we woke into a bright morning, bright fresh spring morning. There is blue in the sky, the sun is out, and there are quite a few clouds, but it's sharp, it's really sharp. Just taking the tent down, my fingers are frozen, so I need to get some gloves on after I record this. Some of the guys that were here have gone, Croydon and Mick and Tom, they've headed off, and we're just packing up now ourselves to get going. Follow the ridge round and possibly drop down or continue on the ridge. We're still discussing or arguing over that point at the moment on the way towards Aviemore. So, yes, it's sort of settled in now. It's day 6, I think it is. And everybody is sort of in the groove and into challenge mode. I notice a lot of people have got various assortments of blisters and ways of looking after their feet. However, it does surprise me, a lot of people don't know what to do with the blister once they get it. Yes, numerous advice comes out in the pub when people discuss their blisters, but most of the time the blisters have come from carrying too much weight, walking too much on the roads, and not looking after your feet on a regular basis. So that's what happens. Also discovered last night another tick on my leg, which I pulled out after I did some recording. But during the night, I felt like my legs were being bitten by various things, and I've certainly got about a dozen bite marks up and down my legs. So I've taken all my bedding gear out and given it a good shake this morning to see if they remove any little monster that might be in there. But so far, I've just found the two ticks. Anyway, I will knock this on the head now, go and get some gloves on. My fingers have gone numb, and we'll get going in a minute, and hopefully I'll pick up a bit later on. ...11 o'clock, and we're navigating our way across the troublesome Mauna Lea. It took us a good probably hour and a half to get away from the industrial complex at Challey Beach. The lorries were certainly shifting stuff. They were digging big holes, presumably for more wind farms, and the dust and the noise all the activity created really impacted on the nature and the peace and quiet of such a wonderful natural landscape. But after an hour and a half of ups and downs and bog hopping and going around peat hags and through peat hags, it's turned into a very pleasant day. I'm down to a t-shirt and a windshirt now, and everybody else has reduced their clothing, got rid of the waterproof clothing, and we're enjoying a very peaceful walk, trying to keep to the ridgeline as best we can, as much as the terrain will allow us. As you can probably hear underfoot, it's mainly dry grass, which is nice, occasional boggy bits and squelches. And then there's the walking across the peat flat areas, which have been drained, but you always treat with a little bit of caution, looking for deer tracks and that sort of thing, to give you an idea of how far the deer went down. You know, you're able to put your foot down on the peat and you will still come out with a shoe. But
For all the challenges I've done and the guys have done, this is probably one of the better kind of days you do get on the TGO. When it's like this, it is absolutely perfect. Still small pockets of snow up here, just walking past one at the moment. So the temperature does keep chilled, and certainly last night was definitely very cool. But we should make our way forward now. In front of me I've got the Cairngorms with patches of snow dotted across all the little corries where they're clinging on. And the ridge that we're following is fairly gentle underfoot, so just more of the same really for a few hours. So it's 11 o'clock now. I think we're aiming to finish around 4 if we can, and try and get as close to Aviemore as we hope to be, and make it a shorter day as we can tomorrow with the shortcut that goes off and cuts the Burma Road in half, which is breaks up the boredom of a long trudge again along another path. But I think everybody last night and this morning was saying just how heartbreaking it was to walk through the best part of 20 kilometres of an industrial site yesterday. It really taken all of us by surprise. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like the work's going to end anytime soon. I presume once it's complete, there'll still be support teams and maintenance teams. So if you're thinking of coming here this way, do check out the video that I'll be doing with this podcast, and you'll get more of an idea of exactly what I'm talking about when I describe it. So, as you can hear, a squelchy bit, we're just going to carry on. Quarter past 3, and we're still on the Mauna Lea, and we're still on the ridge, and we're still walking in glorious sunshine. The wind has virtually completely disappeared, and it's hot. And this particular path, which follows the iron posts which used to hold, I presume, the wire that separated either a county or a landowner or something, it's very stony underfoot, which means you have moments of walking on dry heather like you can hear now, and moments of really watching where your feet go. So easy to twist an ankle or worse. But this has turned into a long day. The Mauna Lea is notorious for navigational challenges. And sure enough, we started off the day meandering rather than going where we should have gone, across boggy heather ground, which lost us some time. So, although we're okay, we're just all a bit tired really, and I'm a bit confused where Tony wants to drop down from this path, because it just seems like we've got miles and miles to go. I remember coming on this path with Rose a few years back, and we had to duck down because a storm was chasing us in. And I remember that quite clearly. I can't remember what year it was. Lee seems to think it was last time we came, which was 2016, which I don't think was right. Anyway, as you hear, the wind is very, very cool and very well received. Oh, stuff like that, you see, you look up for a second and you trip up, which also messes up your shoes as well. So yeah, it's been boggy at times. It's really, really stony. You know, it could be much worse as walking conditions, but I only brought a litre of water up with me, and I must be most of the way through that now, and there's still a long way to go. Lee and Tony, where are they? Oh, there they are. About 400 or 500 metres behind. And no doubt we will stop and just recalculate from here. I'm sure it's one of these hills that Rose and I shot down when the weather came in. But for all that, beautiful, really beautiful. And it just makes you realise, actually, what devastation yesterday and the wind farms generally have done to the Monalea. From here I can see 1, 2, 3, 4 wind farms. Some under construction, some, well, say running. They're not, wheels aren't turning, or the fins aren't turning, or whatever, blades aren't turning. But yeah, I'll be glad to get down and camp wherever they think they're going to camp tonight, aiming to get to Aviemore early afternoon tomorrow. Which again, if it's nice, if it's weather like this, it'd be lovely to finish and use the facilities at the hotel and then sit outside and have a nice cold Guinness. Anyway, they're about to arrive, so we'll see what the conclusion is, see where we are and carry on, I guess. I definitely want to stop by 6 if I can. Well, it's just gone 7 o'clock and it is the end of a very long day. Starting out, I think it was 9:30, we actually finally sort of got moving. Got slightly misplaced, as in only slightly misplaced, but it was enough to keep us going back and forth. A couple of 100 metres bog trotting, trying to get onto the right place to get over the Monalea. But we did the big one. We did the ridge. We left Chalybreet Springs, Carn Ban, Carn Balach, Carn Scoodlin, and Bodak, and finally picking up the track down to the River Dulnane and Hagrid's House. Check out the videos and the pictures if you want to see what that looks like. And now we've walked down the River Dulnane to a rather nice spot where the water just slowly curls round the edge of a large flat green area only inhabited by moles by the looks of it. The stream isn't particularly deep at the moment with the weather, but it's flowing fast enough to provide us with fresh water, and we're hoping to set off fairly sharpish tomorrow to get into Aviemore. Lunchtime, I think, is the general gist of it, really, which we probably can do. But two exhausting days. One just so depressing, and it was all of us, it wasn't just me. It's really depressing coming across Strome Larrig area where they had done the damming and now the wind farm. And it was 15-20k of walking through a very big, heavy industrial site. Well, we all collapsed really at Chalybeate Springs, feeling very down. Everybody that turned up was just horrified by what goes on. But in the morning, we've all gone in our different ways. We expected to see people actually today, but we've seen no one at all, which has been a real surprise. So nobody's obviously coming this way, and I wonder how many people will be in Aviemore. I'm sure there'll be quite a few there, but not coming down this route by the looks of it. So the guys have just pitched their tents. I've just pitched mine. As I say, we are on our knees, but we're planning to get away early, so we're trying to get pitched, get sorted, get the bunks done, get some food on, and we'll probably hit the sack and all fall asleep very quickly, hopefully. So that's my last report for today. Just gone 7 o'clock on Wednesday. I will catch you tomorrow. Thursday morning. Guys want to get an early start and get away by 7. God, it's cold. Flipping heck, it's cold. There's ice on the inside of everybody's shelter. The socks that I washed last night are like cardboard. I can pick them up as one piece and they don't fold. And I can't get my feet into my shoes because my shoes are frozen. Flipping heck, it's cold. I'm just using the F6 shelter with a ground sheet and a quilt inside. And I have to say I am struggling every night. There's a very, very cold breeze that's coming through the side of the tent. And because I haven't got an inner, it's not protecting me from this breeze.
And sometimes when I roll one way or the other, naturally with a quilt, there's a gap that sometimes appears just because of the way things you toss and turn during the night. And that cold draft wakes me up, so I'm considering my options today as I go into Aviemore to see if there's anything I can change. As I say, 5:30, very, very sharp start. The sun is just starting to come up over the hills. It's not bringing any warmth with it, but it is bringing a little bit of cheer. But I could do with the warmth, to be honest. Anyway, I'm going to carry on packing because my hands are getting so cold I can hardly hold the recorder. ...9:30 and we started early as we intended, 7 o'clock, mainly to get down the river and start heading up towards the Burma Road before the heat kicked in, because it looked like it was going to be a good day. And sure enough, that's the way it's turning out. In fact, we've now all reduced to base layers and opening up all the vents as possible to keep ourselves as cool as possible. It's amazing really when you consider the variations in weather that you do get in Scotland this time of year, whether it's the Challenge or anything else. Sub-zero at night, frozen tents. All our tents are sopping wet because we packed them away when there was still frost on them, so I think what we're aiming to do is get to the highest point before we drop down to the Burma Road, and if it's as calm up there as it is here, lay the tents out for 5 minutes and have a bar and a break, and hopefully reduce all the moisture so that we don't spend the next 48 hours carrying a wet tent, basically, which can add an awful lot of weight to your pack. But there's nothing much to say really, apart from it's 2 years since I've been down this river, and I think prior to that there was a year or 2 years possibly. And it's just incredible just how much the river has changed with erosion, how much the banks have been eaten away. I remember first time we came down here, you could virtually walk the length of the river without having to climb too high to avoid one or two of the sort of ravines, as it were, where it suddenly cuts a sharp corner. And we've had to do it 3 or 4 times, so it's quite dramatic. But yes, still wet occasionally underfoot, but pleasant enough on a day like today. It's actually quite a cooling feature. But we should be getting down to the confluence soon, where we take the track up, and we've done it a couple of times, so an hour or so and we should be over the top, I think. So we're sort of anticipating, it's 9:30 now in Aviemore, around 12 to 1 depending on how everything else pans out. Just in time for lunch.
This podcast is brought to you by backpackinglight.co.uk, a small UK independent helping you save weight and enjoy outdoor life more.
...3:30 from the luxury calm Cairngorm Hotel in Aviemore. Well, it was a good day, glorious weather, and so we made good progress along River Dolmain. And we took our shortcut, as we call it, across to the Burma Road. We've done it about 3 times now, and I think this is the second time Tony and Lee have done it, where the confluence of the rivers, that the River Dolmain, there's a track that goes up to, how do you pronounce that, Carn Fuarandu, and then at the top it cuts left to Gealcharm Moor to then drop down to the apex of the Burma Road, and then you drop down from the Burma Road down to Avonmore. Now, if anybody does go that way, please keep in mind it'll take you probably an hour and a half to 2 hours still from the peak of the Burma Road down to Aviemore. It took us just under 2 hours. And they were a hot 2 hours too, so our feet are definitely bruised from that experience. However, we've always, as we come through Aviemore, checked into the Cairngorm Hotel, and they've been fabulous as always and sympathetic to these aching, weary, smelly challengers. And so we have now topped up on fluids and are going to have a bit of a rest and a good scrub down and a wash, having done the shopping and retrieved our parcels, which consist of all kinds of foods and things. And between us all, we're all looking at our parcels going, why did we send ourselves this? So we've now got to pack it all away and carry it. And tomorrow is going to be an even bigger day, probably the biggest day of the whole trip, actually, with the plan to be from here up to the Larry Grew, then the path from the Larry Grew up to Ben McDooey, down to Derrid Lodge. And the anticipation is we'll probably finish about 8 o'clock tomorrow night, so it's going to be a very long day. So I'm trying to keep things under control and not get too carried away with celebrations, having done, well, halfway now. And I hear that a lot of people have dropped out due to blister problems and just generally the heat, which can affect people. From previous experience on the TGO, people drop out from heat or the heat exhaustion, or they drop out from when it's too cold and wet and they can't cope with it. So it isn't all plain sailing. If you plan to do something like this, you've got to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And if anything, it's been possibly a bit too hot today. But I did bring some small tub of suntan lotion with me, and that's helped me, because unfortunately I'm follicly challenged, so therefore I need to be careful that I don't overheat my head. Well, that brings that to a conclusion today. 3:34 o'clock in Aviemore. I hope everybody else is having a good crossing, and no doubt I will speak to you tomorrow when we're all fully charged after a huge breakfast, getting ready for what will be probably the biggest day of the trip. Thanks for joining us once again as we get closer to the East Coast. Entry forms for the TGO Challenge can be found in the October issue of TGO Magazine, and overseas hikers and backpackers are always welcome to join in. You'll hear from some of them who took part in the 2018 event at the end of this series. So, until next time, folks. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.